We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with your usual host, me in the UK, Hayden Geist, and over in the United States, we of course have got James Coker joining us once again. Now, we have had some breaking news that has dropped in the last couple of days. We are recording this on September 6th, and it is confirmed that Oliver Bearman will be driving for Haas at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which will be the following weekend. Now, we alluded to it would either be Oliver Bearman or Pietro Fittipaldi, but now it is slam dunk confirmed. Ollie Bearman is back, and I think for the first time in quite a long time, we've got a driver who has filled in for two different teams.
When was the last time we saw that happen?
I think I saw on social media that maybe it was Mika Salo in like 99, maybe was the last time. I'll double check. I'll have a little look. But yeah, that's crazy that we've got him so jumping in the Ferrari and now Haas.
It's like your first car being like a Lamborghini or Ferrari, and then they're like, actually, this isn't your car. Your real car is a Miata.
Yeah. Or you've done your driving lessons and your driving test in a top end range car, and then here's your first car, and the wheels are falling off. There's no door handles. You have to climb in through the window.
It's like a Peel 50.
Peel 50, yeah.
So you could say that Ollie Bearman is Baku in Formula One.
He is Baku. I like that. That was very good. Good.
So Ollie Bearman is Baku in the car. We're all very excited. How do we think he's going to fare in a Haas? He's not driving a Ferrari anymore. He's not in a top four car.
Yeah, I'm going into this with a pinch of salt. Okay, right. He hasn't done preseason testing. Let's not fully judge him up against a Nico Hülkenberg. But, you know, if you're going to be tipped to be a Ferrari driver in the future, I think you do have to kind of be somewhat put on that pedestal to be, you know, compared to somebody who has got so much experience. He's going up against Nico Hülkenberg, and he does have to perform. He cannot jump in that car and be at the back of the grid. And I don't think that, you know, we can sugarcoat and go, oh, okay, well, you know, he's not done the full season. He's not driven this car before. He's done a little bit of FP1, so he has driven the car before. And I know it's not a massive amount of testing, but it is still some testing. And I just feel like, you know, it's got to be not fully scrutiny because he's got a full season, and that's when we're going to properly judge him. But it will be a teaser, a trailer, as potentially what to come in 2025.
I feel like the Azerbaijan Grand Prix is not a good litmus test on how he's going to do.
Well,
because
done
I feel
and
like
he's done Baku, hasn't he? So two difficult circuits, which is fair
enough.
It's
a street. It's like, I think, similar to Zandvoort, Monaco, Hungary. We all know Baku's a street circuit. I feel like there aren't a lot of opportunities for overtaking. It's also a race that doesn't have like a ton of tire deg. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you remember the Grand Prix last year, but almost every car could have finished that entire Grand Prix without a pit stop.
Yeah,
and Esteban Ocon essentially did.
Yes.
But like in the second to last lap, pulled in because he had to. He didn't want to get disqualified. So like, I feel like strategy is not going to be as big of a factor in this race if it's anything like last year's race. So it's really going to come down to qualifying and then not binning it in whatever position you qualified in.
Yeah, and I do feel like street circuits are driver circuits. Like, they are your proper test of driver more than car, because it is up to that driver to be brave enough to put it as close to the barriers as possible. Now, I'm a big Lance Stroll fan. You know, I'm always going to defend him. But I will tell you for certainty this weekend he will be miles off his teammate Fernando Alonso, because there is something about street circuits that Lance Stroll is not brave enough to put it close to the barrier, unless he's putting it in the barrier like he did in Saudi Arabia this season, and he disappointed me there. But, you know, I just feel like it's a true test of driver skill and driver bravery. And if he performs really, really well this weekend, then he is going to set himself alight in Formula One next season. He's going to get a lot of hype around him. But if he doesn't, yeah, and he's at the tail end of the field, you know, I know Haas are there anyway, but I'm talking like, you know, Logan Sargeant levels where he was under scrutiny. If he's in that position, of course, you know, down in 19th, 20th, miles off the pace of everyone else, then people are going to be asking those questions.
But I'm excited to see Ollie Bearman in a car again. It will definitely be a different experience being in a Haas as opposed to a Ferrari. But speaking of Ferrari, we have a little bit of news. They have announced a new technical director. I'm going to butcher this person's name, but I believe it's Loic Serra.
I'm going to say it's Loic. Maybe you're right with Loic. Loic?
Loic?
Loic.
Loic Serra, like formerly of Mercedes.
Probably wrong, aren't we?
Formerly of Mercedes is going to take on the role of chassis technical director. Now, the way Ferrari's organizational chart is, they have a separate technical director as the chassis technical director and another technical director as the power unit technical director. However, the reason why a lot of us feel like this announcement and news is important is because it's made it pretty much clear that Adrian, even though we felt like this was going to happen, Adrian Newey is not going to Ferrari. And it's made it seem like the announcement of Adrian Newey to Aston Martin is more and more imminent as the days pass.
Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed to not see Adrian Newey at Ferrari, because what a combination that would be.
And, you know, I would have been so excited. I would have loved it.
Yeah, for him ticking off, you know, doing a Ferrari, which he's always wanted to do, and also a car for Lewis Hamilton, would...
Which he said he always wanted to do.
Exactly, you know, it's one of his three. The other one is doing a car for Fernando Alonso, which, of course, going to Aston Martin, he will tick off that one. But that would have just been incredible. However, you know, he is in the latter stages of his career, you know. I completely understand why you wouldn't want to move to a foreign country when your family is all settled in the UK. Why you would want to do that? Would you want to then, you know, your family stays there and you just go work and back and forth? No, you know, you just want to keep it simple, keep it easy. In the later part of your career, I'm just going to go and stay close to home and just have this new project that I'm excited for. Because I think whilst Adrian Newey is getting on, I do feel like he's going to be in Formula One for as long as he possibly can be, because he just enjoys the competitive nature. He enjoys, you know, building an excellent car, a championship winning car. He gets that thrill from doing that. So I'm not surprised he's still in the sport, but, you know, I'm also not surprised he doesn't want to move his whole life over to Ferrari. Disappointment for us, but completely understand it.
Totally. I think that interview where he talked about things that are on his career bucket list that he wish he had done or he hopes to do, working for Ferrari, working with Lewis Hamilton, working with Fernando Alonso. I think there was another bucket list item that was on that list that didn't make it into the interview, and that was make a boatload of money.
Make a boatload of money. That is true. That is true. What is it, like 100 million?
That's the rumor. So, like, you know, I think that was also on his list. So he's like, you know what? I get to work with Fernando Alonso, El Nano, and I also get to make a boatload of money. That's also on my list.
If you're one of his kids, you're like, don't, we don't want to go to Italy. You go there, Dad. Go there. Inheritance money. Yeah. So we're going to be nice and close for that will.
And then, of course, Aston Martin social media trolled us with a video on TikTok that said, I think originally it said new team announcement, and then they took it down and then reposted it saying like new team update. And at first we all thought we were going to see an Adrian Newey announcement only to get Rickrolled.
Yeah, they had him at the Grand Prix in Monza, I believe, over the weekend. So, you know, just the perfect time to do that. You know, all the news, all the announcement, everyone's speaking about it. Oh, it's going to be announced next week. It's coming. It's finally coming. And then obviously they dropped that in a reel, in a TikTok. Yeah, I think it was like new team member announcement or something like that.
Yeah.
And then bam, you know.
Just we see the Rick Astley walking.
Yeah, and he's just walking in the garage. Perfect. Perfect social media.
I love a good Rick roll. I've made a few videos where especially when Sauber slash steak slash kick revealed their livery with the chroma green. Mm-hmm. I took footage of the car driving around the circuit and I put Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up video on the car. And so it's just, F1 is ripe for Rickroll. I will never get tired of a Rickroll. It's always so good.
They I feel like they need to do more with that chroma green on the livery. I don't know whether Steak would be happy with it, but Steak are—they're clearly not going for performance of car. That's quite clear to see because they're at the back of the grid. But they are definitely going for having the best social media, being the most entertaining, and you know, slap something in some sort of social media in some sort of After Effects with use that chroma green. I mean, you might have a few words that they are copying you, but I'm sure you can sort out a deal.
I cannot claim to invent the concept of Rickrolling. That is like, that is in the meme canon in the history of internet jokes and japes. So I cannot claim any ownership over that. But back to the Adrian Newey announcement, the entire world, fans, industry professionals, drivers, team principals, we are all waiting with bated breath. This is like the F1 equivalent of waiting for white smoke from the Vatican. Like, will a new pope be elected? Where will Adrian Newey sign? What color smoke are we going to see coming out of the chimney? Is it going to be red smoke? It looks like not.
Nope.
Is it going to be blue smoke? I don't think blue smoke can afford Adrian Newey. Pink smoke, maybe. But most likely, it's probably going to be green, right?
Yeah, we're expecting green smoke. Who knows when? Who knows when? We could get Christmas before that time. I have no idea when this is going to drop. Every single week, it's like, oh, this week is coming. This week is coming. Yeah. Adrian Newey news is probably going to drop this week, by the way. And it's just, no, just going to keep on delaying it, which if Aston Martin aren't signing him is incredible marketing for them, because they are definitely playing up to it, playing towards
kind of like when Fernando Alonso played up the Taylor Swift rumors.
Yes, which I'm still buying. It still happened.
Even
if it was, but just maybe one there's date.
Maybe they're not in a rush because, you know, he's just, Adrian Newey's just hanging out gardening, you know.
Is that what you do on gardening leave? Do you have to do gardening? Like, is it
is it required?
Yeah, is it a requirement that you have to spend the whole time gardening?
You're like, all right, you're on gardening league. Here's your gloves. Here are your pruning shears. And you're like, what if I don't want to do this? You don't have a choice. It's in the rules.
The Chelsea flower show is just full of people who are waiting their new job.
Half of the people at the Chelsea flower show the whole time are F1 professionals. They all got their gloves. They're like, all right, I gotta plant 20 varieties of tomatoes in my backyard.
Who would have the best and who would have the worst garden if all the drivers got put on gardening leave?
Oh,
because
all
obviously
the
Lewis
drivers
got a Ferrari, and say they just went, okay, you're going to Ferrari, you're out of Mercedes, like you're not driving us for the rest of the season now. And also you gotta go on gardening leave. Who will have the best and who would have the worst green thumb?
Well, this is the only reason I say this is because that one video of him smelling the flower in the background is Fernando Alonso. I feel like he has a close personal relationship with plants and flowers everywhere. So I'm going to say Fernando Alonso. And then the worst, Nikita Mazepin.
He was on my list, but I suppose he is on gardening leave at the moment, isn't he? So all he can do
is
gardening right
now. How did... I'm just like, we just asked you to plant some flowers. How? Why are they burning in the corner?
I can imagine him just like golf swinging daffodils, taking the heads off of the daffodils in the garden.
So that's who I would pick.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Moving on, Miami Grand Prix has announced that they're considering shifting the Grand Prix to a night race.
Okay.
What do we think, Hayden? Good idea, bad idea?
Could be a good idea. I mean, night races are cool. I don't feel like we should have too many of them because then, it, you know, you have too many of something. It makes that thing less special. Sure. Like when we have so many street circuits coming to the F1 calendar. I remember when I first got into F1, you know, you'd be really excited for a street race weekend because it was like once in maybe like four times a season. Now it feels like almost half the tracks are street circuits. Yeah. But yeah, with night race, I think it could be a good move. How hot would you say is the Miami Grand Prix? Would it change the conditions? Because that's what Bahrain did. Bahrain was one of the ones that I sticks in my head the most that went from a day to a night. And Bahrain was like 40 degrees at the time when it was a day race. And it massively changed. And I don't think there was before ever an enjoyable or like exciting Bahrain race. And then as soon as it went to night, the races got a lot more exciting from being
a night race. 2024 Grand Prix was the range of temperature was 75 degrees to 84 degrees, but in the sun, I think it's pretty. It's even hotter.
Let's just track temperatures are hotter. The rest of
29 degrees Celsius. All right. It would cool down to 69 degrees Fahrenheit, 21 degrees Celsius at night.
Okay.
So
not too much of a shift. Enough, yeah. Obviously, Formula One terms. But not a massive amount. I guess it's just, would it look cool at nighttime? I think it could look cool at nighttime, but I feel like Miami is more a daytime vibe, you know, or at least maybe a sunset. You know, when you think of like Miami Vice, sort of, you know, you get that sort of pink and blues where I feel like a nice, you've got to time it well. You have a really, really good sunset, but I feel like that would suit it a lot better.
It would be quite late for the UK if it was a night race, though. You'd be watching it at midnight, right?
Yeah, it would be one of the ones that is completely away from everyone, all the other tracks, because we have Vegas, which is 2 a.m, I believe, US time.
On the East Coast, it started at 10 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard Time. So that's 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
So
that's an additional 4 hours for the UK. So that was like 5 a.m. for y'all?
Yeah, it was 5, 6, I think 6 a.m. it's scheduled for this year. 6 a.m. in the morning, which is fine because that's very similar to Australia, Japan. Like they're around those sort of times.
If you live in Australia or Japan as a Formula One fan, you are screwed.
Yeah, you are screwed.
You never get to watch a race. Yeah, you never get to watch a race at a normal time unless it's at Suzuka or at Melbourne.
Yeah.
Or Singapore, right?
We moan over the UK quite a lot compared to how lucky we are for races. I suppose if there was a night race at Miami that was a midnight race, or, you know, I guess maybe I don't know, an evening race, if it was like a sunset race, I think for us would be maybe what you lot experience for most of the other races, because I feel like you're watching quite a lot of races at nighttime, right?
Yeah. Mostly I'm watching a race at like 4 or 5 or 6 in the morning.
Is it more like the Asian races?
The only time I watch at night is Las Vegas, Suzuka.
Yeah.
And that might be it. Australia. Yeah. Those end up being night races, which is fun. Okay. It's nice to switch it up.
Yeah. I suppose for us then it would be, if it was a sunset race, then it'd probably be, when you're out in a club, you got your phone out still, and you're watching the race.
Do you go to clubs, Hayden?
No,
you don't seem like a club type to me.
I'm too old. I'm practically married off, so it's just bed early or at home early, and that's it for me. No going out.
Yeah.
Can't stand it. It gets to 10 p.m. and I'm just there at the clubs going, Right. Where are we going home?
Yeah, I mean, this is no offense. I'm not a club type either, but you don't seem like a club type
at
all.
I'm really no. I could have some fun, but no, not anymore. I'm past those days. COVID aged me.
I think it aged a lot of us. All right, moving on. Today is September 6, 2024. Some fun facts. On this day, September 6th, 2020, 4 years ago, Pierre Gasly shocked the world with a win at Monza at the Italian Grand Prix driving for AlphaTauri. Hayden, where were you when this race happened?
Where was I? I believe I was watching this race on a YouTube channel. I won't mention the YouTube channel, but I think you can watch my reaction to this race live.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure I was on that episode.
We got to find that reaction.
I'll have a quick little look. I'm pretty sure I was on that episode. But yeah, I remember it very, very well and just being like, oh my God, Stroll could win this race. And then obviously he bowled it.
Of course. You always make it about Lance Stroll.
Hey, you know, that's dedication to the cause. But yeah, I remember that. And I thought, you know what? Because I remember Hamilton had the penalty at the restart. So Stroll, I think, was like P2 at the time. He benefited. Yeah. And that Racing Point was a very, very good car. And yeah. He managed to mess it up and did not take
was
home.
Was that the same year Perez won a race from P last?
Yep, that would have been the same race that Perez won from last, because Stroll was on the podium that race. And he was on the podium in Monza as well. But they had a really decent car. Yeah. They were like the third best car at most races.
Wow. So you were watching it. What was your reaction, and what were like your friends and other F1 fans' reaction to Pierre Gasly coming out of nowhere to win in an AlphaTauri?
I think it was just like pure elation for like everybody. I think it was one of those moments, a very, very rare moment in Formula One, unless you're a diehard Sainz fan, that you were happy for this result and everyone was elated for it. And this is why I always come back to saying that I don't think domination is necessarily a bad thing in Formula One. I think obviously having one team dominate or one person dominate is bad, and then you don't have competition. But if you have a couple of teams, so say what we're kind of going into at the moment, three or four, I think is really, really exciting. But you still have those teams at the bottom that, you know, you look at and say, you've got no chance at a race win. So that when they pull off something like this on a rare weekend, everybody enjoys that. Everybody loves that. And it just makes that feeling of the competition so much more valid to those teams, and obviously seeing how much it means to those people that are working in it. So yeah, I think everyone was happy with it.
Yeah. I was not watching Formula One at the time because I'm a dumb noob, but going back and watching that race and watching the highlights and seeing how much it meant to Pierre Gasly and seeing how much it meant to the team AlphaTauri, and seeing how, like, seeing fans react to it, it's just like, it's such an incredible moment. It just felt like a really special moment to be a Formula One fan.
Yeah, yeah, certainly so. I've just confirmed I was on that episode. So I was watching with some friends in a living room, two housemates that I was living with at the time. And yeah, very happy. Just, I think everyone was very, very, I don't think there was anyone who was not happy for that result.
Yeah. Special moment on this day, September 6th. We've also had four other Italian Grand Prix on this day, September 6th,
2015. Don't ask
me who won them. I'm going to.
Oh no, I knew this was coming.
2015, 1987, 1970, 1964. This will be easier. Who won the 2015 Italian Grand Prix?
This is
an easy one.
I think it was Lewis Hamilton.
There you go. Yeah, baby.
I'm going to guess on the podium as well was, I think maybe it was Hamilton, Rosberg, and then a Williams, I think, was on the podium as well.
It was
Hamilton, Rosberg, Massa.
Hamilton, Vettel, okay. Massa.
Okay.
So, yeah.
1987, though. Oh.
But that was Massa driving for Williams, so you were right. So let's do 1987.
Yeah, 1987. Okay.
I will give you a hint.
Okay.
Podium was Brazilian, British.
Brazilian, British. Okay.
In that order.
We've got Piquet, Senna. And then 87 British driver Mansell.
Yes, that's exactly it. Nelson Piquet number one, Senna number two, Nigel Mansell number three. Did you cheat? Did you look this up?
No. I mean, Brazilian 80 sort of gives it away. I think, you know, yeah, Piquet, like, triple champion, Senna was.
But you could have you could have said Senna Piquet.
Nah,
and then
I know that Piquet was getting those championships around those sort of times. Senna was just up and coming, and I think really started to get into the McLaren and winning championships in like 88. Onwards.
You killed it. All right, here we go. We're going to do 1970. Would have not been able to get this one, but Swiss, British, French.
Okay. 70s British. I'm going to go Stuart as PC.
Yes.
I think that's an obvious. French in 70s. I don't know about... Is Reutemann, is he Swiss?
I don't know.
Regazzoni, I don't know who's.
Yes, that's okay. It. Regazzoni got P1. Jackie Stewart got P2, and then P3.
French 70s. It might be kicking myself, but I don't think I'm gonna be able to get this one.
Jean-Pierre Beltois.
Nah, I wouldn't have got that one. I only got Clay Regazzoni because I'm pretty sure he's part of the Rush film and he's with Lauda as like his experienced teammates. Yeah. So that was the only reason
He's driving for Ferrari, and then Javier Beltois was driving for Matra.
Okay.
All right. And then the very last one.
64. Jesus. Okay.
Okay. You're going to like this one. 64. We got British, Kiwi, Italian.
Okay, so Kiwi, I guess, has got to be Bruce McLaren.
Correct.
Okay, so British, Kiwi, Italian, right? British, yep. Surtees?
Yes! Oh my God, you're killing it!
And then Italian 64. Fittipaldi's Brazilian.
Driving for Ferrari.
Driving for Ferrari, Italian. I feel like Alberto Ascari is too late for him. I feel like it's not going to be him.
Yeah.
Trying to think of corner names in it. Alberto someone. I don't know. No idea.
Lorenzo Bandini.
Okay. Name rings a bell, but yeah, I wouldn't have been able to guess.
You were very good at this exercise, by the way.
I feel like winners I'm quite good at. Was that Surtees championship winning year, 1964?
Let's see.
I think that might have been his championship winning year.
Yep, 1964 yeah. Formula One season. Yeah.
And do you know he's the only only driver slash rider to ever win the F1 World Championship and the MotoGP Championship or whatever it was called back then. Yeah. He's the only person to do both.
You know, I feel like if he really wanted to, Valentino Rossi probably could have pulled that off.
There were times. There were honestly,
he's
I
a
think
good
there
driver.
Were times. And I think there's also been times that Lewis Hamilton said that he'd want to jump on bikes, but I feel like nowadays, because the seasons are so long, it's a lot harder for these people to go and do something else. And also, you know, when you're so successful in one sort of area, I think it's more difficult to go and be successful in another. You know, like Formula One and IndyCar, I think back in the day in the 90s, I think Formula One drivers could certainly go win a championship there, go to IndyCar and pretty much muck about and win it quite easily. But now I think the competition would be
Like
Mansell did, yeah. I think it'll be harder now if a Formula One driver went over. You know, who knows? Lewis Hamilton could go over to IndyCar and absolutely walk the field with it. Is that something I'd like to see? I'd like to see him over in IndyCar, of course. But I also just think that's never going to happen. Same with going over to like a MotoGP. I just feel like they're doing so well in their own sport. Why go over to somewhere else and potentially ruin your reputation if you suck at something, you know?
Nigel Mansell seems like a pretty nice and humble guy, but if I had been him and I'd won Formula One Championship in 92 and then got to IndyCar and won in 93, I would have been like, I'm invincible!
Yes. That's crazy.
But back on track, also on this day, Sid Watkins, a legend in motorsport, was born on September 6th, 1928. A lot of longtime Formula One fans know Sid Watkins. He as Formula One's first doctor. He was, but also, aside from that, was a world-renowned neurosurgeon who just happened to also have a passion for motorsport and started working in Formula One. Worked in F1 from 1978 until 2005. Passed away at the age of 84 in 2012. Most people know him as being responsible for transforming Formula One safety protocols. We all know in the 60s, Jackie Stewart as a driver was a big safety advocate and is responsible for a lot of advancements in safety in the sport. But Sid Watkins took it to another level, making sure that there were proper medical facilities at the circuit, helicopters to transport the injured, a trained medical response team, encouraging safer car and circuit designs, as well as developments in the helmets that the drivers wore. He is one of the most respected people in Formula One's history, and a lot of F1 fans are also very familiar with the relationships that he had with a lot of the drivers, especially an incredibly close relationship that he had with Ayrton Senna.
Yeah, I think you get a good idea of Sid Watkins because there's never really been a proper documentary about him, and of course, Johnny, it's more been of aspects of other part of the sport. So there's a great one, I can't remember what it's called, but it is about the early days of Formula One, and it's very much there's a great amount of it on Jackie Stewart and obviously his push for safety and bringing in obviously and Sid Watkins coming into the sport as well. But I think you get a better sense with the Senna documentary too, which I think is really, really good. Is it a documentary or is it like a biopic? Is that what they're called? The Senna film. But that's really,
I haven't
really
seen the Senna film. I watched the Senna documentary earlier this year. And I know Sid, the day before Senna tragically passed away at Imola, Sid Watkins told him to retire.
Yeah, yeah. And that just showed how close they were. But also, I think an incredible person in the sport and one of the most influential figures. I think when you talk about influential figures of Formula One, people like Sid Watkins kind of go under the radar because of people go, oh, Michael Schumacher was the most influential because, you know, he was one for seven championships and he was such a popular person in the sport. But, you know, I think more importantly, it's those people like Sid Watkins who changed the sport to get it to where it is today. And you know, it's never perfect and it's always evolving and we'll always find holes in things that we have maybe never thought about. You know, you look at Jules Bianchi's sad death, and going into that, I don't think there was too many people. I think there's a famous quote from Martin Brundle who said, one day someone's going to crash into one of those trucks, but no one took that sort of seriously. Just like, oh, we've always done this. We're not changing this. I think as well, Halo introduction. Everyone was like, it's ugly. I don't want to race with it. And then you add it for a season. And I think in the first season, it potentially saved two drivers' lives. And then further on from that, it saved so many. So, you know, as a sport, we find so many more things. But Sid Watkins, it all comes back to him and his push for safety in the early days and being a doctor that could be, you know, on track, at the ready, on action, you know, has definitely saved countless lives.
Yeah. Sid Watkins definitely deserves his own documentary because I agree with you that I think his influence on the sport is so monumental and deserves the proper credit and acknowledgement. And I know a lot of Formula One fans know who he is and respect that and acknowledge it. But I think everyone, a more mainstream audience needs to be aware of that. Aiden Millward, who I cite all the time on this podcast, made a really good like 10-minute long video talking about three different instances where he explicitly saved three different drivers' lives, one of them being Eric Comas in that qualifying session that a lot of people refer to when they talk about Ayrton Senna, because Ayrton Senna pulled over the car and got out and stabilized his body before Sid Watkins arrived. And in this video, in Millward did, he talks about how Ayrton Senna got out of the car, held Eric Comas's head upright, checked his vitals, made sure he was breathing, and held him in a stable position until the medical team arrived. And the reason Senna knew how to do that, and he shut off the car immediately, so the car didn't catch fire. Because at the time, Eric Comas had become unconscious and his foot was down on the gas, so the engine was just revving and the wheels were off. And, you know, you just heard this, you know, the screaming of the engine.
Yeah.
So Senna pops out, turns off the engine, stabilizes him, before Sid Watkins arrives. But the only reason Senna knew how to do all those things is that Sid Watkins walked him through it and taught him how to do it. And at the time, Sid Watkins considered teaching all of the drivers how to do this. And then I think for the sake of time or logistics, wasn't able to do it. But Ayrton Senna specifically asked him about those procedures and knew how to do it. And a lot of people credit that with saving Eric Comas's life.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly so. I mean, it's an incredible feat. Maybe if only, you know, it was able to be taught to everybody and maybe all drivers, but it's obviously nowadays, of course, it's not maybe as much of a necessity because you have so much medical personnel there at the ready that you rarely need a driver to get out. I think most recently we saw George Russell at Silverstone 22 when Zhou went upside down and then went behind the barrier. Obviously, he got out of the car, ran over to him, but in all honesty, there's not much that George Russell can really do. Because you've already got medical personnel and marshals on the scene straight away. Obviously, it's a kind gesture, and Joe would really massively appreciate that. But in the reality is, you know, George Russell, I know he's got the meme of pushing things apart, but I don't think he's going to be able to quite lift that car out of that position and get it back.
I think it was just an instinctual act of human compassion.
Yeah.
Even if you can't really contribute to helping that person, you want to feel like you did everything you could to help the situation. But yeah, a very happy birthday to Sid Watkins, who will always be remembered as one of the most incredibly influential people in Formula One.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Moving on, you and I have a couple comparisons to talk about. We all know Premier League season, English Premier League has started just a few weeks ago. College football started last week. So we're going to do a little exercise where, Hayden, you are going to tell me what F1 teams match with which English Premier League teams. And then I'm going to tell you what college football teams match with each Formula One team.
Okay, right. So, first of all, we start off with Mercedes, a team that's very much, you know, at the top of the board. Really came into Formula One recently whilst being a big brand. Okay, they were in Formula One in the early days and winning championships when it began, but then went away for a while.
Let me guess. Are you going to say Man City?
Oh, of course I'm going to say Man City. Come in, a lot of money, straight away. You know, it takes a few years for them to find their feet. But once they've found their feet, they're there. They're at the top. They're dominating. No one can really touch them apart from a few years here or there where they kind of get a little bit close, but then fail off. Obviously, now we're seeing maybe the future of football and Man City falling off. Maybe right now in Formula One, we're seeing what happens after Pep Guardiola. So I would say very easily comparison, Man City, Mercedes, I'd say they're very similar.
Also, you have both organizations run by two silver foxes. Well, he's not silver yet, but both are run by two zaddies in Pep Guardiola and Toto Wolff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't really call Pep Guardiola a silver fox either because he's got no hair. So you've got one who's got
That's
none.
True.
And one who's got a great head of hair.
But they're both zaddies.
Both zaddies.
Sure.
Definitely zaddies.
Yeah.
Do you want me to carry on, or do you want your Mercedes comparison?
No, I wanted you to go down the line, and then I'll do my thing.
Now we go to Ferrari. You know, a team that are very successful in the noughties. Fallen off, but come back here or there. And I was between two teams here. One of them being Manchester United, the other one being Liverpool. And it's not a great comparison right now, but I would probably say they're more like a Manchester United. Always been there. You know, always been, even since the early days, winning stuff in the 50s. 50s and 60s, I think, United. And then obviously came back and had a very dominating part in the 90s and 2000s, definitely the 2000s for Man United. And I'd say that's very similar to Ferrari. But right now, I wouldn't say you can massively compare them because United are you know, in the mud. But Ferrari,
I mean, to Ferrari bearish standards, Ferrari is in the mud. I mean, they are a top four team, but the bar is so high for Ferrari. If they are not winning, they're considered shit.
Yeah, but Man United aren't even top four. Like, they're not even a top four consideration. Look at the tables right now. They're down in 14th, so they're having an absolute stinker. But yeah, so I'd say Ferrari, Manchester United. Okay. This is where
I think that's accurate.
Maybe like a little bit harder with all the other teams, but I would say Red Bull, I would say Chelsea. We're putting those two together. Good amount of money, good amount of backing behind them. But also, I'd probably say one of the more disliked teams in Formula One and in football. I'd say most people, unless you're a Chelsea fan, I feel like most people dislike Chelsea. And I think unless you're a Red Bull fan or a Max Verstappen fan, most people would probably dislike or be neutral with Red Bull. I don't think there'd be a lot of people that go, oh, no, they're all right. They're all right. I don't mind them. So I'd say those two teams, yeah, I think very much slap on with each other.
Yeah.
Now I'll go a little bit further down the table. I'll say go to RB.
Yeah.
And I would say RB are Southampton. I am a Portsmouth fan, so I dislike Southampton. So it's not that I dislike RB as well. I will put them two together because Southampton have a good academy. I'll give them the credit for that. They have a good academy.
Okay.
But a lot of their players go off to other teams and don't really stay at Southampton and build that team up. And that's why Southampton usually stay in the lower end of the Premier League, get relegated, come back. Because those players disappear. And, you know, you think about RB, AlphaTauri, Toro Rosso, they make drivers, but then those drivers go off to either other teams or off to Red Bull, and they just leave little poor old RB to deal with the sharks down at the bottom of the table once again.
Love it.
Who else have we got? Right, we are looking. I'm forgetting Formula One teams. It's like when you ask someone asks you what's your favorite
McLaren
movie.
Where's McLaren?
McLaren. Who would I put as McLaren? So I'd say before this season, you'd probably look at them being like an Everton, very successful in the 80s, but then have dropped off. But then they've come back, and Everton really have not come back. They're down the bottom of the field. So let's try and look for another team. And so then maybe Newcastle. Newcastle, a team that maybe not as successful in terms of winning everything in the 80s, but, you know, a successful team in the past.
Yeah. Speaking of Newcastle, have you ever seen the movie Goal?
I have seen the movie Goal, yes. I've seen Goal. Have I seen Goal 2?
I've never seen Goal 2, but I've seen Goal. And a lot of people don't like that movie, but I thought it was kind of fun.
I enjoyed it as well, but I was a kid when I was watching it. I think it's the same as when you watch Formula One films. Because there's not that many, you actually quite enjoy them. So they might not be good movies when someone who's like a critic goes about them, but because you don't get that much of it, it's like, oh, I quite like that. Actually, that's really, really good. So I quite like Goal as well. My favorite football film is a football film called Mean Machine. That's a very enjoyable one.
I've never seen that.
It's really good. It's got Vinnie Jones, who used to be a footballer, and then he became an actor.
Okay.
He stars in it. So yeah, I see Newcastle because they're on the way back up. You know, they're on the verge of top four, Champions League. I think they got Champions League a few seasons ago. So I'd say Newcastle, McLaren. Let's put them in the same bracket.
Where would you put Sauber?
Sauber.
They keep changing their name, so are they MK Dons?
Oh, God.
Formerly Wimbledon, now MK Dons.
I think have Stake have got no fans as well, then, I guess. They've got a really empty empty grandstand. It's just CGI people that are there. Who would I go for Sauber? Maybe... Who is someone that's massively just dropped out of the football league? Someone like
Leeds? I mean, Leeds did drop because remember, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Damn United.
Yeah.
But, you know, historically really one good. Of the most successful clubs ever. And then due to financial insolvency, had to drop several levels down in British football. And it took them forever to get back into the Premier League.
I don't feel like Sauber have ever been really, really good. Like the one race win with Robert Kubica.
Yeah.
And they could have gone for the championship that season, but they decided to say, do you know what? We're not going to focus on the championship. We're going to focus on next year's car because there's big regulation changes. So we're not going to focus on this car anymore. Even though we're leading the championship and we've just won a race, we're going to focus on next year. How'd they do next year? Sucked. And they lost the championship as well.
I feel like Sauber is, you know, is a team that's always been around and they've never been good. So they're like a QPR. They're like a, you know, they're like a Queen's Park Rangers.
Queen's Park Rangers. I was going to go with Everton. Someone who was, but Everton were maybe too successful. So yeah, maybe a Queen's Park Rangers, or just looking at the table right now, maybe even a Nottingham Forest, you know, had that flash in the pan a couple of times, but then disappeared. After that, maybe an Aston Villa, but Aston Villa are doing all right. So,
also, isn't Aston Villa the only team to never be relegated, or did they get relegated a few years ago?
Ooh, I don't actually know that. I
remember when I first started watching Premier League soccer in like 2015. At the time, Aston Villa and Everton were the last two teams to have never been relegated from the Premier League.
Okay,
but I believe one of those teams had been relegated since that point.
I don't remember either of them actually getting relegated in the last few years. But you can double check that. Who else have we got?
I'm not a Premier League expert, so any of you pedantic people listening who want to like give me shit for it, I don't care. Yeah, so they were relegated. Villa was relegated and got promoted again in like 2019 or 2020.
Okay. So Everton is the last one then, and they are actually in the.
I think so. Yeah.
I think they just avoided it last season. They're probably going to be in the fight for it again this season. What is a team that's always bottled winning?
By the way, tangent here. Tangent. What? How crazy would Formula One be if there was a relegation system?
Yeah, you have F2 teams and drivers coming up. Maybe that's what it needs to be in the drivers' championship. You know, you have those bottom three drivers in the championship; they're booted out, and then you have the top three from F2 up. They go into Formula 2. Teams wise, I feel like it'd be a bit more difficult. Premier would just come in and be like, "We haven't got the facilities for this. We're getting relegated immediately." And then you've got someone like Sauber who just absolutely... Well, you wouldn't dominate F2, would you, really? Because you don't... All the cars are spec. But I think it would be a very interesting concept. More so for drivers. It's what we've done in a crater.
You know what would happen is Prema would get promoted and relegated every other year.
Yeah. They would literally be the biggest yo-yo Formula One has ever seen. But yeah, something that we've done in a crater racing series that we do on weekends, where we had Formula 2 and we had so many craters sign up. So we had an F2 series and an F1 series, and the bottom five from F2 went up against the bottom five from F1 went up against the top five of F2, and they had a playoff system where they all would race it against each other, and you do like one race in F1, one in F2, one in F1, one in F2, and then a finale in F1. And the points from that evening of the playoffs would go into a table, and the top five of that table would go into F1, the bottom would go into F2. So it would be a playoff system.
Like,
and it was really, really fun. And I think, I think that would be quite a very Americanism, I think, of the sport. But sometimes Americanisms aren't bad. They can make them more engaging. And I think that would be something.
We don't have relegation in American sports.
No, but you have playoffs. Like, you're bringing in playoffs. I think bringing in a playoff system.
Yeah.
And I think a playoff system would be quite fun. In a spec series, and you're just like, bam, race for your seat.
I love it. I need to correct myself. Everton was relegated in 1951. And then made it back to the top flight of football in 1954. They are the longest running team to not be relegated. Essentially, every team has been relegated in English football in the long history. In the modern Premier League era, a lot of the top teams have not been relegated, obviously, like Man U, Arsenal, Hotspur, Tottenham Hotspur, et cetera,
yeah.
But so someone's going to try to correct me, so I'm going to correct myself first. There we are. Are we missing any other teams?
Well, we missed a few teams. On what you've just said, I want to add in a little fun football fact because we're going off topic, and I just want to add it. This is one I always love to tell people. But my team, Portsmouth, have... So we have our domestic cup in England, which is the FA Cup, which is the one that all teams, like even if you're in lower down, like you're in grassroots football, you can enter into the FA Cup. Portsmouth have held on to that cup for the longest time. Nobody has held on to that cup for longer than we have. And do you want to know why?
Why?
Because we won it before the start of World War II, and so no games were played for a fair few years, and that's why we held it for the longest. So that's our pride and joy.
Were you explaining the FA Cup to me, or were you explaining it to the audience? Because I know what the FA Cup is.
Both. Both. We're talking to Formula One fans. A lot of them probably could be like, can we just get back to the Formula One, please? Shut these two up.
I watch the FA Cup. I watch the League Cup or whatever you want to call it, the Carabao Cup.
The Carabao Cup. That's a rubbish one. No one cares about
whatever
that cup
the fuck
anymore.
You want to call it, cup.
They also have because Portsmouth are a team. Maybe that's another. Maybe Staker Portsmouth. You know, they've gone down, come back up, gone down too many times. But there's a trophy for if you're in League One and League Two, which is the third and fourth divisions of football. And it's basically like the Farmer's Trophy. What, the year that we won it, it was called the Johnston's Paint Trophy, which was just a paint company. And then second season we got to the final, I think it was called the Papa John's Trophy. So
love that.
Love that.
Maybe one year it's going to be the Specsavers
It
Cup.
Could be. It could be. All right, so where were we? Tottenham. Which Formula One team would be Tottenham? Who bottles a lot? I'm trying to have a look here at team names. Alpine, I think I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting Tottenham vibes from Alpine.
This is what I'm going to say. I would say Alpine is Arsenal because they haven't been good since the 2000s.
Yeah, I agree with that. There you go. We've gone from the other side
Arsenal's
of North London.
Arsenal's good. Don't get me wrong, but like Man United, like F1, like Ferrari.
Yeah.
If you're not winning it in Arsenal fan standards, you're shit.
We're
or
second place. We're
British.
Just the second loser or the first loser.
Yeah.
Haas, I would say, are a Brentford. Their stadium's made out of Lego bricks, and I'd say the Haas car is quite similarly made.
Everything
as well.
Is awesome.
Williams, who's Williams? Oh, haven't been good since the 90s. And then just in the mud. Leeds. I mean,
Leeds
and Williams.
Yeah, Williams and Leeds is a perfect match.
Yeah. I haven't done Aston Martin. Aston Martin. Getting better now. Maybe Aston Martin are like an Aston Villa.
I was going to say, is there a team that was recently bought by a billionaire and is just injecting a ton of cash to make them
that
good?
That would be Newcastle, but I feel like I already
gave
that
one. Yeah, that'd be Newcastle, right? Because they were bought by Saudis, right? Yeah,
McLaren and Force India can just share Newcastle. They can just be built on opposite ends of Newcastle. And I think that's it. I think that's all the teams. I think I've got every single one.
Yes. I would go through the college football comparisons, but I feel like we've gone kind of long, so I think we should save it for next week. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm happy to save the one for next week. We can dive into that.
Yeah, so if you really want to hear my college football comparisons, you're just going to have to wait a week, folks.
Come back and join us next week for more football talk on the Formula One podcast. But this has been a good podcast. Been good fun to have this chat. I don't think any sort of other breaking news has really sort of dropped, and obviously we've got a break week for this weekend. So finally, I say finally, it feels like we've had those 3 weeks off, but it's been then a very hectic 2 weeks. Of everyone coming back into Formula One, a lot's been going on. So I feel like not too much news is going to happen. But I hear rumours Adrian Newey news is going to drop next week. So we're going to keep an eye out for that
one. It's probably going to drop the second we stop recording this podcast.
It always does. It's not dropping next week. I can tell you that. It's going to be dropping in like 4 weeks' time. There's no way it's dropping next week. If we say that, then it will drop. Okay? Then it will drop. That's going to wrap up for this week's podcast. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Make sure you follow us on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to right now. Go follow James on his socials and make sure you drop me a follow as well and follow the official WTF1 social channels as well to see all the clips from the podcast and all the other Formula One news as it breaks and when it breaks. But until then, have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.